Well, good morning, everyone, on this special high day. What a blessing it is that we're able to be here on a commanded holy day. You know, these spring holy days are certainly special. This is one that is definitely going to be my most memorable, I think. Well, yesterday, the world was out keeping Easter. They had all their celebrations with the Easter bunny, Easter egg hunts, sunrise services, and all of the other meaningless celebrations. You know, sadly, they have no understanding of what they're even doing. Certainly, no understanding of what they're actually worshiping. They have no idea that what they do does not honor God in any way. And actually that they are unknowingly making a mockery of Christ's sacrifice. The one that they claim that these celebrations are for. Now, I don't think it would be much of a stretch to say that, you know, today most of them have forgotten all about yesterday. There was no real meaning to it. They move on with their lives. And all they have to show for what they did yesterday is maybe a basket of chocolate eggs that they got to finish. You know, what a comfort it is to know that God has called us. He's called all of us in this room to be His people. And He's called us out of this world to keep this Feast of Unleavened Bread, this last day of unleavened bread. It's an annual reminder of the wonderful plan, the promise that He has given to us, and that God has a purpose for His people. It's meaningful. We keep these days so that we don't forget that promise that God would deliver us and deliver His people from Egypt and being enslaved to sin. You know, we keep this day and we rehearse these stories in these days to remind us of the journey that we're on, moving away from sin and moving forward towards eternal life in God's kingdom. Now, these days are just chock full of meaning for us. They're not about, you know, silly little trinkets of bunny rabbits and stuff that mean nothing. And this day and these holy days mean something to us. You know, now we're really just a few hours away from completing the 7 days of not eating in 11. We've gone without cookies. We've gone without cake. We've gone without hamburgers. Unless, of course, you get the lettuce wrap ones that they try to sell sometimes. I guess you can have them that way. But still not a hamburger without that nice big bun. No donuts to go with our coffee in the morning. You know, our minds have been focused on putting sin out of our lives and keeping it out. So when these days are over this evening, how eager are we going to be to get back to our old lives? Now, is there some kind of leaven that you're really looking forward to? Do we quickly forget the joy that we had by keeping these feasts and keeping this feast and the peace of mind that comes from purging out that old leaven and living a new life, a life that moves forward and doesn't long for what we were or what we were doing before? So my purpose this morning on this holy day is to focus on what we can do to keep moving forward and never turning back. And that actually is the title today, is to go forward and never turn back. So let's start this morning by rehearsing the story of the Israelites and their delivery from Egypt. And it's important to rehearse these things. It's important for us to remember and never forget. Turn over to Exodus 13. Mr. Sayu talked about putting his font at 18 for his notes. I'm not quite at 18 yet. I've bumped mine up to about 14, but it's just right at that point where it's starting to get fuzzy. So I slipped my glasses in my pocket, and I don't think any of you really have seen me ever wear glasses, so I'm not going to do it unless I really need to. But Exodus 13, and let's start in verse 6. It says, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. And on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Lord. That's today. And unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days. And no leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. Now here we are today, thousands of years later, on this same seventh day, keeping the commanded feast. In verse 8, it gives us the reason why. It says, and you shall tell your son in that day. You know, this is who we are. This is our heritage. You know, our children love to hear family stories. You know, they want to hear about where they come from. And they want to hear who they are. It gives them a sense of belonging. And God says that we are supposed to do that. We're supposed to tell this story. Going on, it says, saying, this is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up from Egypt. It shall be as a sign to you on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the Lord's law may be found in your mouth. For with a strong hand the Lord has brought you out of Egypt. God wanted these days of unleavened bread to be kept, and the lessons that we learn to be taught from generation to generation. And that's why we're here today. He wants us to refresh it in our minds. He wants us to pass it down. You know, God uses physical leaven and the lessons that we can learn from it during the days of unleavened bread to teach us spiritual lessons. The spiritual lesson of our redemption from the bondage of sin. Look in verse 17, and it says, and it came to pass when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God led them away of the land of the Philistines, or God led them not the way of the land of the Philistines, but instead he led them the way of the wilderness by the Red Sea. Verse 21, and the Lord went before them a day by day in a pillar of a cloud to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light to go by day and by night. Exodus 14, verse 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel that they turn and set camp by the Red Sea. So there was different directions that God could have led them, but he said, I'm going to lead you this way, and I have a reason for it. Verse 3, Exodus 14, verse 3 says, for Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are entangled and lost in the land. The wilderness has shut them in. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart that he shall follow after them, and I will be honored over Pharaoh and over all his host, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. And it was told the king of Egypt that the people fled, and the heart of the Pharaoh and his servants was turned against the people, and they said, why have we done this? That we have let Israel go from serving us. Why did we let all these slaves go? You know, it's kind of a what were you thinking moment to him. You know, it took him a couple of days, I think, to get over the shock of what he had just done and what had just happened to him. And with a little bit of help from God to harden his heart, his anger got the best of him. And he came after him. Verse 6, and he made ready his chariot, and he took his people with him. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. And he pursued the children of Israel, and the children of Israel went out with boldness. They were excited. This was something that they had been wanting and waiting for hundreds of years. And the Egyptians pursued after him, and all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh, and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them where they camped by the sea. Verse 10, and when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. And they were in great fear. And the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord. You know, here, just a matter of a couple of days, they were walking out with a high hand, with boldness, because God had delivered them. And in a matter of a couple of days, they were in great fear and crying to God. Verse 11, and they said to Moses, because there are no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt this way with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Why have you done this to us? You know, are you just toying with us? Is this not the word that we did tell you in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? It's a funny little statement because, you know, here they'd been wanting to be delivered out of slavery, and at the same time they're going, didn't we tell you, don't do this, don't take us out of here, we're fine. It says, for it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness, rather be in jail. Now here the Israelites had been in captivity and in slavery in Egypt for 400 years. They cried out to God asking to be delivered. And God performed amazing miracles with the plagues. And he showed both Egypt and the Israelites, his people, who he was, and that he would fulfill the promise that he made to deliver them. They were led out of Egypt by a pillar of cloud and a pillar of fire that never left them. And after all this, they were ready to run back to their chains and their bondage and give up. And they even desired death as something better than the freedom that God was offering them. You know, they hadn't even really made it all the way through the Feast of Unleavened Bread yet. And here they were wanting to go back. Now, sometimes when you read the story and you know, take a step back, put yourself in their shoes. It's easy to think that, you know, we wouldn't complain. If we saw all that, if we saw all these amazing miracles, well, we wouldn't be complaining. Right? We wouldn't be crying out to God or blaming Moses for doing this to us. You know, but when things get difficult, they get a little overwhelming, or we start worrying about all the bad things that can happen to us if we go this way, what's the first inclination in our heart? Most of the time, it's to start complaining, to wanting to go back. You know, it was just better the way it was. I don't want to do this. You know, can I go some other direction? Look in verse 13. And Moses said to the people, fear not, stand still. You almost kind of sense that he was, you know, getting mad at him. Fear not, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you will see them again no more forever. The Lord shall fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. He's saying, be quiet, and just watch what God's going to do. And the Lord said to Moses, "Why do you cry to me? Why are your people crying?" He said, "Speak unto the children of Israel and tell them to go forward." Verse 21, "Then Moses stretched out his hands over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea into a dry land, and the waters were divided." Verse 22, "So the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left." Massive walls of water. I think they stopped complaining at that moment. Their mouths probably dropped in awe as they saw this massive walls of water with a path of dry land directly in front of them, an escape route. And they moved forward, probably pretty quietly, for at least a little while. They crossed through the Red Sea with these towering walls of water surrounding them, and the Egyptians on their heels, trying to drag them back into Egypt. Yet they made it to the other side. God delivered the Israelites out of captivity, just like he had promised to Abraham. This story is given to us to help us understand that God has a plan of salvation for his people and ultimately all of mankind. These examples show us how that plan and the process of salvation is a journey. God wanted the Israelites to learn, and wants us to learn in our generation, to put all of our trust in him. This was a hard lesson for the Israelites to learn. Over and over again throughout the story, they would fear the difficulties and the trials that were facing them, that were ahead of them, and they would forget what God had done for them. You think, man, you see signs and amazing miracles like they saw, there would be no chance that you would ever have a lack of faith. And here the Israelites, was just a matter of days every time they had something else to complain about. Satan's doing everything he can to entice us, to discourage us, to want to go back to Egypt, to want to go back to sin. Every time we face these adversities and difficulties, he tries to step in. He knows those things are hard for us. He tempts us and tries to get us to give up and give in to the desire and go back, giving up on the journey that God has called us to. God, our Father, has a fervent desire. Luke 12 and verse 32 says that it's your Father's good pleasure to give his kingdom. It's his fervent desire for us to be in his family if we would just trust and obey him and go forward. And when we trust and we do what God says without fear, without restless complaining, and we go forward, he says that he'll fight our battles for us. He will give us peace and peace of mind. And through Jesus Christ, we can have salvation. Isn't that one of the wonderful blessings of this holy day season that we keep? Knowing that we can be renewed, being free from sin, and having joy from living in obedience to God. Because that's where true joy comes from. He didn't say that it was going to be easy or that we aren't going to have to work for it. Israel, for example, they walked through the wilderness for 40 years. It wasn't exactly easy to do. God even said that he could have led them a maybe a little more direct route. But he said he didn't do it on purpose because it was too easy for them to go back. There was too many routes going back. And he led them specifically through the Red Sea because there was no option to go back when that Red Sea closed, killing all of the Egyptians. He says that it will be worth it if we just trust him and obey what he says. And that's why we need to keep these days of unleavened bread and remember. These are direct physical lessons and examples for us now. We've been delivered from our Egypt. We've been delivered from sin. We rehearse each step of this process of our salvation every year as a reminder, as a renewing of that covenant that we made with God at our baptism. We were buried underwater, and we've been delivered to a new life. Turn over to Romans 15. Romans 15 and verse 4. It says, "For whatever things were written before were written for our learning, that we, through the patience and comfort of the Scriptures, might have hope." Hope in what? Hope in our salvation. So when this last day of unleavened bread is over and we have to go out and, you know, we have to buy some bread, make sandwiches for the kids' lunches, and we put some crackers back in our cupboard and maybe buy some cookies to put in the cookie jar, it'll probably only be a couple of days before we forget about looking for the leaven in the box. We just don't pay attention to it, which is okay. But the question is that will we forget the lessons that we have learned and that we reinforced over the last 7 days? Will we forget how far God has led us away from sin and the bondage that it creates? Will we forget how far we've gone in the process? We've crossed the Red Sea. We've been on this journey. Are we going to forget how far that God has taken us and all the amazing and marvelous miracles that he's performed in our lives? That we're here today, a very small group of people out of this enormous world that does not know him. Can we continue to clearly see the destination that God is leading us to, his kingdom? Or will we start desiring to go back at that first difficult trial or temptation that we encounter? Let's look at 2 Peter. 2 Peter chapter 2. Second Peter 2 and verse 20 says, "For if, after they have escaped the pollutions of the world through the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ," right? God has called us. We've come out of this world. "They are again entangled in them and overcome." So we get caught up in the chains and we are overcome by sin again. It says, "The latter end is worse for them than the beginning." Verse 21, "For it would have been better for them to not have known the way of righteousness than having known it to turn away from the holy commandment delivered to them." Verse 22, "But it has happened to them according to the true proverb, a dog returns to his own vomit, and a sow, having been washed, goes back to her wallowing in the mire." Now, the last few days, I've been, you know, browsing through, you know, my Facebook, looking at what different people are doing, some of my friends, and I know I've seen a few posts from people that I've known, people that I've grown up with in the church, people that I went to Ambassador College with, who are no longer a part of God's church. And they're happily talking about their Easter plans. And how much fun their children are having getting ready, and they're painting eggs, and they have pictures of them in the kitchen with all their eggs, different colored eggs, and they're painting, and they're having a great time. And it's sad to see, you know, firsthand, when someone has slowly turned away from God, and having been deceived by Satan, go back to bondage and the sin of this world. You know, they had the truth. They knew the right thing. They claimed to believe it, and now they are entangled in the world, and they have completely forgotten the truth that they once had and that was available to them. When you stop doing the physical things, when you stop keeping the Sabbath, when you stop keeping the holy days, when you don't eat unleavened bread, and you don't get leavening out of your house, you forget. It leads to losing all understanding. And it would have been better if you would have never known the truth. It's going to be a sad and scary reality for them in the end days when they recognize what they left behind and what they went back to. So what does it take for us here today to not turn back? What should we be doing to avoid the captivity of sin and continue moving forward to the kingdom? Well, one of the things we need to do first is that we need to put something back in. We need to put righteousness back in. You know, when we've gone through the process of putting out the old leaven and purging out our sins, the void that is left needs to be filled. And something has to be put back or put in. Habits and thoughts, those things take time and energy. You know, we've developed routines sometimes. And when we remove those things out of our lives, you have to put something in its place. Something that takes time and energy so that you can fill that space. We need to put something else back in those areas of our mind and our hearts so that the old sins and the old struggles, wrong thoughts, the carnality, can't get back in and it can't take root again. Because we're full. Let's turn over to 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians 5. It says, therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed, Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. We should have a joyful and a relieved heart, knowing that Christ's sacrifice, which we have just commemorated by keeping this Feast of Unleavened Bread, has paid the penalty for our sins. Those sins are behind us. They are gone. And the burden and the weight of those sins has been removed. Verse 8, therefore let us keep the feast not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice or wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Put out the malice and the wickedness and fill it with sincerity and truth. We need to move forward being genuine, not a hypocrite, not self-motivated, self-seeking. And we need to always seek the truth in all that we do. Turn over to Ephesians. Ephesians, let's look in chapter 4. Ephesians 4 and verse 17. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness or the hardness of their heart, who, being past feeling, have given themselves over to lewdness and to work all uncleanliness with greediness. Is that something we want to go back to? Do we want to go back to a hard, selfish, carnal heart? Let's look at verse 20. In verse 20, it says, but you have not so learned Christ. This is not what we've been taught. 21, if indeed you have heard him and have been taught by him, as the truth is in Jesus, that you put off concerning your former conduct the old man which grows corrupt and according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on the new man which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. So we put all of this wickedness out, and we put in true righteousness. We put in the things that we've been taught and the things that we're learning through Christ, and we become holy in our actions. So what are some other things that we can put back and fill the void left behind when we remove the old leaven? Let's look in Galatians. Galatians 5 and verse 22. Verse 22, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, which is, well, that's a tough one, self-control. Against such, there is no law. There's no penalty for these things. There's no death penalty for doing these things. He's saying, put these things in. Verse 24, and those who are of Christ, and those who are Christ's, have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. You know, we should put those things behind us. We now need to imitate Christ in this Christian walk, in our journey. He is our perfect, sinless example. Verse 25, if we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. So eating unleavened bread is a physical reminder that we need to put something back. It's not about just getting rid of it, but it's about putting unleavened bread, about putting sincerity, about putting righteousness, putting truth back in our lives so that the other stuff has no room to go. There is no void for it. We have no time for it. Turn over to James. James chapter 1. Verse 21. James 1 and verse 21. It says, therefore, lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness, and receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to save your souls. But be doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. We need to keep living this way of life. We need to put righteousness in our lives and replace the sin that we removed. And if we don't, sin will enter back into our lives. Verse 23, for if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man observing his natural face in a mirror. For he observes himself, he looks at himself, he goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of man he was. How quickly can we forget? It says here, immediately. If we're only just saying the words, and it's not something that's, you know, in our heart, it's not something that's in our mind. Verse 25, but he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it. We don't stop putting sin out when these days are over, but we continue in it daily. And is not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work. When you're doing it, you don't forget. When you're talking about it, you forget what you said. This one will be blessed in what he does. Verse 26, if anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit the orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. We have to do something. Look over in Romans 12. Romans 12 and verse 9. Romans 12 verse 9 says, let love be without hypocrisy, and abhor that which is evil, cling to that which is good. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love and honor, preferring one another. Not lazy in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing diligently in prayer, distributing to the necessity of the saints, giving to hospitality. Bless them who persecute you. Bless and curse not. You know, when they took Christ away and they knew what was going to happen to him, he didn't curse those individuals. He didn't complain. He just did it. Verse 15, rejoice with them that do rejoice and weep with them that weep. Be of the same mind one toward another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. See, don't put yourself up where you think you're better than everybody else. Be not wise in your own conceits. You know, have we filled our lives with these attributes during the days of unleavened bread? I know we're putting in unleavened bread, but where were we putting these things in our lives? Now, did we apply the physical lesson of purging out the old leaven and replacing it with unleavened bread? Now, the point of this physical lesson is for us to make some real change in our lives. And we go through this process annually to refresh and to rehearse the idea that we have to get sin out of our lives and we have to put righteousness in. We have to get rid of the bad habits and the wrong thoughts and the sin. And we need to be doers of the word, putting God's way of life into our own. Now, if we can go a week, right, if you've gone a whole week without eating leaven, I won't say without sin, but if you can go a whole week, can we go two? Can we go a month living this way of life? Could we go a year then living this way of life? The idea is that we're always moving forward and never going back. When we slip, We start over. We just keep right on going. We don't go back. We keep moving forward. Now, another way that we can keep ourselves moving forward is to keep our eyes focused on the goal. Turn over to Proverbs. Proverbs 4. And let's look in verse 23. It says, "Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life," he advised. We have to control and focus our minds and our emotions, or we can become easily distracted. And we can get tripped up. Or we can start to look back and desire temptation. Verse 25. "Let your eyes look straight ahead, and your eyelids look right before you." Now, one of the first things I learned when I was learning how to drive, and I remember my dad telling me, "Keep your eyes looking straight ahead, because if you're looking over here, you're going to start driving over here." He said, so don't look at people like on a bicycle. Don't look at them. Don't focus on them, because you're going to start getting close to them. Keep your eyes on the road ahead. Don't look at all these distractions. Because where your eyes go, that's where you go. Keep focused where you're going. Straight ahead at the goal. Verse 27 says, "Do not turn," or verse 26 actually says, "Ponder the path of your feet and let all your ways be established." So establish and plan your path. Verse 27, "Do not turn to the right or the left and remove your foot from evil." You know, a life of integrity requires attention to where you're stepping. If you're not paying attention to where you step, you could slip. You could get hurt. Or even step in something that you don't really want to step in. Now, there's this new problem that is talked about, and it's on YouTube, and there's videos of, and comedy videos of, and that is this idea, or the people who are walking and texting at the same time. And there's some pretty funny videos. And not all of them are funny. Because people are texting and they walk into a pole, or they walk into other people, or they walk out into traffic and get hit by a car. Or they fall in a manhole that's open and get hurt. Because they don't have their eyes fixed on where they're going. They're distracted. Psalm 119. Psalm 119 and verse 37. It says, "Turn away my eyes from looking at worthless things." Don't get distracted. It says, "And revive me in your way." This is what we need to be looking at. We need to be revived in God's way. We need to be seeking God's way and applying it in our lives. You know, our thoughts and our speech and our heart, our conduct and our eyes need to be firmly fixed on God and His kingdom. And we need to be turned away from sin. Let's go to 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians 4. And verse 17. Paul tells us, so our light affliction, which is but for a moment, you know, this is the things that we go through in this physical life, is just a fleeting moment in the big picture. to these things, they work for us a more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, not on these distractions and the stuff that is around us, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. We need to fix our eyes on the goal, that final destiny and that destination of this journey. So what else do we need to do? Or what else do we need in order to keep moving forward and not allow ourselves to turn back? Well, we need to have endurance to finish the journey. Now, how long after the Israelites experienced this great escape through the Red Sea? They have been rescued by God, delivered from Egypt in miraculous ways. I mean, these were spectacular events that happened in their lives. But how long did it take them to start to complain when they're now on the other side? They've made it. You know, Exodus 15, verse 22 says that they made it a whole 3 days. That was it before they started to complain about not having water. Here God just parted an entire sea of water for them. They go 3 days without a little bit of water and they're crying to God, take us back to Egypt. At least we had food and water there. God's like, I just parted the sea for you. You don't think I can give you food or water? You know, this theme of the story repeats itself over and over again, and their endurance was very thin. They complained about not having food. Then they didn't like the food that God gave them. They wanted meat. Then it was too much meat. And on it went for 40 years. And when they finally did get to the promised land, they were even too scared to go in, too scared to move forward. Yet this reticence is not something that was just unique to Israel. Let's turn over to Matthew. Let's look in Matthew, chapter 24. Matthew 24 and verse 3. Now he sat on the Mount of Olives. The disciples came to him privately saying, tell us, when will these things be? And what will be the sign of your coming at the end of the age? They want to know. And Jesus answered and said to them, take heed that no one deceives you, Satan has many tools at his disposal. And he tries to deceive us and into giving up. He tries to deceive us into going back to Egypt or going back into captivity. Verse 5, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars, and see that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass. But the end is not yet. For nations will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and pestilence and earthquakes in various places. All these things are the beginning of sorrows. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all the nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many, and because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will wax cold. Verse 13, but he who endures to the end shall be saved. And this is the gospel of the kingdom, or and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come. You know, Jesus was telling his disciples and us that this journey that we're on is going to be hard. And by that description, it's going to be really hard. And we're going to need to be full of endurance when terrible times come. This path that we've been called to be on is not easy. It's not a walk on the beach. Because if it's too easy, then it's too easy to go back. This journey is going to take us through an unrelenting wilderness. And if we don't have endurance, we're not going to make it. When you consider all the difficulties that we might be enduring right now, and those things are serious to us, and they're hard, and they're difficult, it pales in comparison what's going to happen just prior to Christ's return. And we're learning now, and we're learning these stories and these examples so that we can have the endurance to make it to the end when those things do come. We cannot get weary because it will be worth it. God says it will be worth it. He promises that it will be worth it if we endure. Romans 8:18 says, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us." All this that we have to endure through is going to be nothing compared to that amazing reward that God has in store for us. So what should we do? Philippians 3. Philippians 3 and verse 13. Philippians 3 verse 13. "Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth to those things which are before, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Jesus Christ." We have to press forward, move forward with our eyes fixed on the goal. We need to forget those things which are in the past and reach for the things which are ahead of us. We cannot allow ourselves to look back to our old selves, back to when things were better. You know, this romantic notion of, you know, back in the day when things were so much better. We're not looking back. We're looking to this future that's going to be way better. The past is in the past, and we have buried the old man when we were in that watery grave. We need to live as a new man, looking forward to the reward that's ahead. Hebrews 12. Hebrews 12 and verse 1. "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight." Right? Shed this stuff, this past, and the sin which does so easily beset us. And let us run with patience, endurance, right? Patience and endurance, the race that is set before us. As Christians in this journey, or as Paul called it, a race. We're in a race. We have to endure, and we cannot give up. We can't put our hands on our knees, hang our heads, and think that there is no way that I'm going to make it. I will never be good enough. I might as well just give up. I don't know why God's even working with me in the first place. I'm full of sin. I'm just going to go back. It's just so much easier. I'll just go back. Put the shackles back on me. You know what? It's just better off being back where I was. This is the reason that we need that perfect sacrifice of Christ and that is to deliver us from the penalty. He has done that for us so that we can move forward. And we should never give up. Turn over to Philippians. Philippians 1, let's actually start in verse 3. You know, these are the words from the special music in this passage that we're about to read. Verse 3 says, I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine, making request for you with all joy, for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now. Verse 6. Being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. God is going to complete what he has started. God's promise is true and it's sure. And he has a purpose for us. And he has a purpose for his people. And we are his people. You know, Galatians 6 verse 9 tells us, let us not be weary in well-doing. Right? Well-doing is keeping God's commandments, keeping his holy days, and showing love one to another. Let us not be weary in doing those things, for in due season we shall reap. We're going to reap the reward of eternal life in God's kingdom. This is the prize. If we faint not. We are here today keeping this Feast of Unleavened Bread to remember that wonderful plan, that incredible promise, and the purpose that God has set in motion for his people, for us today. You know, the story of Israel being delivered from Egypt through the Red Sea is there for our example. It's to remind us of what's in store in our future. These special days are a reminder that God has delivered us out of bondage and our captivity to sin. He's leading us on this journey away from sin and death to his glorious kingdom. We have to go forward with our eyes firmly fixed on that destination, putting sin out of our lives and putting God's way of life into our own. And we cannot give up or become weary when things get a little tough or we face trials. We have to have endurance to make it to the end. Rather, let us go forward and never go back.